listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's show is going to be on Paul Millsap and the news that the Nuggets received today. Devastating news. Paul Millsap will be missing, it sounds like, quite a bit of time, estimated 3 months, as he gets torn ligament repaired in his left wrist. So the injury happened against the Los Angeles Lakers on Sunday night. He exited the game, briefly re-entered, and then exited the game for good. The Nuggets were down 20, so, you know, I don't think there was anything ominous that night. I certainly thought, oh, that's interesting, but probably they're just so far down, he's going to rest what was a minor injury. Then when there wasn't a report from the Nuggets that night, it was kind of shrouded in mystery. It was the first kind of eyebrow raise. The following day, they got the x-rays. Usually x-rays come back right away. I mean, a team within an hour usually has a result of an x-ray. They didn't release the x-rays results. I'm guessing they had to get multiple opinions on it. Sure enough, on Monday, they announced that the x-rays were negative. There was no fractures in the wrist. But then he was taken out of the lineup for Monday, and we found out from Michael Malone on Altitude Radio that Millsap had flown from Sacramento, made the trip from L.A. to Sacramento, then flew from Sacramento to Denver, left the team to get reevaluated by team physicians. And this was the first time I thought, oh, no, I think something bigger is up. It would be weird for them to kind of go through that protocol. And then sure enough, we find out in the afternoon that he will require surgery to repair a torn ligament. And the timetable for return is uncertain at the moment, but more likely going to be measured in months, not weeks. A huge blow to the Denver Nuggets. This was the biggest free agent signing maybe in the last 30 years. And he gets 16 games into the season, and unfortunately looks like he's going to miss, maybe as much as half or more of the entire season. 3 months looks like it would put him out until February or March, right around the trade deadline. And, that means the Nuggets' playoff hopes are going to sink or swim without him. He'll certainly come back in time for the team's toughest stretch. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But the Nuggets season is by and large going to be determined without him in the lineup, and that's just it's painful to even say it, quite frankly. This is a huge blow for a team that was very, very excited to add him and a guy that I just thought was starting to mesh and come around, and so it's absolutely devastating blow. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about all the players who are affected by this. There's some players who are affected more than others by this. And then, of course, I'm going to talk about the team and how they are affected by this injury. But before we get into it, I want to tell you about our sponsor for today. This is Draft Wednesday on the Locked On Nuggets podcast. And if you're listening to this, hopefully you're listening to in the morning as you drive into work or as you're starting your work day. Sign up for draft.com, or you can download the draft app on your phone. I'm going to be tweeting out probably sometime around 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, Mountain Time, an invitation to join me in a private Locked On Nuggets draft off. Lots of games on the Wednesday slate, and the draft app, what makes it so cool, it's like a daily fantasy sports, a lot like DraftKings or FanDuel, but instead with this one, instead of just having an allotted amount of points or money you get to spend on a player, you actually draft. You sign up for a draft, in this case, the private Locked On Nuggets draft, and once it's filled, all of us will enter the draft room, and it'll be just like a regular snake draft, just like in the NBA. You're going to draft your team for the night. I'm going to draft my team for the night, and we're going to see who comes out standing. I'm 1-2 and on a hot streak. I've won my last one. So if you like to play daily fantasy sports and you like to play just for fun, this game will only be $3 buy-in. Probably have 4 or 5 people playing. Maybe I'll open it up a little bit more depending on how much interest I get on it. So hit me up on Twitter if you want to participate. I'll be sure to expand it if I get a lot of people interested. But it'll be an opportunity to see if you're smarter than me at daily fantasy sports and if you can beat me off my hot streak, 1 in a row. So again, go to draft. You could follow me. My name is L.O. Nugs on there. You could follow just like social media. And what that will do is it'll alert you to when I'm opening up the the private draft group. Or you could follow me on Twitter, at Locked On Nuggets. I will announce it from there, from that account. I always do daily pools. I'm trying to do a lot of interactive stuff on there specific to this show. So if you guys like the show and you want to participate, get on Twitter and follow at Locked On Nuggets, and then you'll never miss up little opportunities like this one here. So it should be fun. Sign up for it, and let's play a $3 game. And I should also mention, if you use the promo code LO Nuggets, LO like Locked On, LO Nuggets, you get $3 free just for signing up. So sign up, you deposit your $20 or whatever, and it'll give you an additional $3 bonus that you can use it however you want. You could use it for tomorrow's game, so it's a free game. So do that. You can always cash out, of course, afterward if you don't like it, but I have a feeling you'll enjoy it. So let's talk about the players that are affected by this, and then I'm going to end with what this means for the Denver Nuggets roster. We'll start with Kenneth Faried, who will likely become the starter now on the Nuggets starting lineup. And we know this from the very high-profile media day interviews with him that our own Chad Andrews did, and then also, you know, a bunch of other people got a scrum around him. He considers himself a starter, and not just considers himself a starter, but he likes to start because he is an energy player. And what gives somebody energy but the crowd cheering as they announce your name and you come out of the tunnel? So is that a little vain? Yes, it's a little vain, but I totally get it. He's an energy and emotional player. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, so it's no surprise that he likes these types of things. So he's going to move into the starting lineup, and he's going to bring that energy, I think. You know, the Nuggets starting lineup, first of all, it's going to be hard to top. They have been phenomenal this year through ups and downs. They have been a very, very good five-man unit, one of the best five-man units in the NBA. And they've done it primarily defensively with like mediocre offense, but really good defense. I think it's funny, you slide one guy out and one guy in, and all of a sudden I think this team takes on a completely different persona. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think we know that Millsap and Jokic are a good pair. I've talked about this a lot on this show. It hasn't always happened this season, and I do have some questions about, you know, how the Murray, Harris, Wilson, Fareed, Jokic starting lineup is going to look. But I think I'm optimistic that starting lineup is going to be pretty good, and I think that Kenneth Faried can be a really big part of that, a high efficiency player who brings a lot of energy. So his finishing hasn't been great at the rim this year, but I think that his minutes now are probably set to go up, or if not up, certainly more consistent. And I think that you'll start to get some good effort and some good energy out of him. So good, great news from him, from his perspective, in that I think he's now slides into a much more important role on this roster. Wilson Chandler, this is where I'm kind of interested. I think in the starting lineup, his offense obviously hasn't been there this year. I think he's been really bad. I see people always saying, you know, people saying that I think Wilson Chandler's having a great year. I don't think I've ever said that. I think he's having actually a pretty terrible year, one of his worst years offensively. I think his defense has been pretty good, and I think that when you look at the lineup, the starting lineup that he's in, he's been pretty good. But I think Wilson offensively is in a major slump, and especially with his shot, he looks very unconfident or not confident with his shot. The Nuggets are going to need his spacing now, and when I look at it, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, that's tons of spacing in theory. Great opportunity to kind of play that Jokic ball and move off of Jokic the way they were last year. Faried, obviously a great addition to opening up the spacing. Wilson Chandler is that X factor. We saw with the Sacramento game, I thought the Will Barton starting lineup with him at the three provided a ton of spacing. So Wilson Chandler, it's going to be interesting to see how he does with that starting lineup, to see if he can kind of start to get an offensive rhythm and if things look a little bit more familiar for him and if he takes on a bigger scoring role. Because, again, without Paul Millsap there, that's one less creator. Faried's not a creator. He's a finisher. So you replace one creator for one finisher. Maybe Wilson now steps into more of a creator role with the starting lineup. We'll see. But I think more importantly for him are the opportunities to play power forward now behind the starting lineup. So while I'm unsure about the starting lineup and maybe not too optimistic about Wilson Chandler's fit now in the starting lineup, I am pretty optimistic about his fit staggered behind the starting lineup, meaning once they start to go to the bench, because I think Malone, there's a great opportunity to play Wilson in more stretch lineups, more positionless lineups that'll put him on power forwards defensively and put power forwards on him on the other end of the floor. And I think that's really where he's at his best. So you look at it, You know, if I were coaching this team tomorrow, and look, they play Houston. That's going to be Denver was 0-4 against Houston, I believe, last year. That's just a tough matchup for them. So I don't think whatever happens tomorrow, I don't think you can draw too many conclusions from that game. I think you got to give it like four games before you really know what you have with these rotations. But if it were me, the rotation I would go with is the starting lineup as is with Fareed in there at the power forward spot. I would probably play Jokic all the way through the first 9 minutes of the game. Right now he plays six, then he comes out three, he comes back in. I would play him the entire 9 minute stretch. But what I would do is I would take Fareed out around the 5 or 6 minute mark. I would move Wilson Chandler to the power forward spot and bring in Juancho Hernangómez Will Barton at the three. And then I would play another 3 minutes like that. That's a small ball lineup surrounding Nikola Jokic. Off of that lineup, I would bring in Will Barton. Juancho Hernangómez, slide Barton to the two. Obviously, Emmanuel Mudiay. I would bring Plumlee in for Jokic. And now you have another stretch lineup around Mason Plumlee. And you look at a lot of the issues this year for that bench lineup. I think a lot of it has to do with trying to play Mudiay, Plumlee, and one other big or Wilson Chandler who at the three who didn't really space the floor very well. There just wasn't a lot of spacing. I think there's an opportunity to really space the floor with this second unit. Now, obviously, the big drawback is defensively, I think you take a pretty big step back, especially with that second unit. But, you know, I think if there's a positive to these lineups, I think that they really can become great and dynamic offensive lineups, and guys like Mudiay, Plumlee, Wilson, an opportunity to shine in a role that I think is more comfortable for them offensively. So Wilson, you know, don't know that I love him as a starting small forward now with this lineup. He's going to have to make some shots, and I think he'll get some better looks, so hopefully he can kind of get into a rhythm. But I do like him a lot now, slotting him in at power forward more, and I think he's going to play a lot more of that. Juancho Hernangómez thrust into the rotation now. Coming into the season, you know, you thought he would be a part of the rotation. Playing in FIBA this summer, or EuroLeague this summer, EuroBasket, I guess I should say, this summer, I thought hurt him a little bit from a readiness perspective, and, you know, he had to take some time off of camp, and his legs are tired. And then he gets mono and just, I mean, really risked derailing his season, and maybe that's the case. Maybe we find out that his legs just aren't there this year, and it's going to take an entire year for him to kind of get his body back. But at the moment, I would say he's going to be thrust into the rotation, and he'll probably play a lot of combo forward spots, 3 or 4, alongside Lyles and alongside Wilson Chandler. I think he's going to be out there. You know, they'll have Wilson and Lyles will probably be the quote unquote power forward in those lineups. At least they'll guard power forwards in the lineup. But I think Juancho will play kind of similar role. He'll just be a combo forward, and his shooting now becomes a huge part of it. His shot would look good in the Sacramento game, so maybe he's ready to step in and actually looks even better than he did last year. But he's going to be thrust into that role, so he'll probably play some four. He'll probably play more minutes and be a bigger part of the roster. I don't see Malone going to Darrell Arthur. I think it'd be a huge mistake, first of all. I don't think you replace Darrell Arthur is like the C version of Paul Millsap. It doesn't provide the space. He kind of brings some of the negatives without the spacing. And I know he shot 40% last year, but I just don't think guys guard Darrell Arthur. Half of the value of the three is in guys stretching the floor and coming out to guard you. I don't think Darrell Arthur provides that. So I think Malone is probably going to go to more stretch lineups. I would be very shocked if instead he went to Darrell Arthur. You got Trey Lyles and Malik Beasley, both of these guys, and I'll start with Lyles because Lyles, I think, is the next guy in. His minutes will probably become a lot more consistent. I still think the rotation probably has Juancho ahead of him. But Lyles is a guy that's going to get an opportunity, and I think he'll be one of those guys that on any given night might end up playing 20, 25 minutes, depending on how he plays, how he shoots the ball, how he defends. You know, those are the two big questions for him. So he now gets an opportunity to step in and play some minutes. I think off of the bench, you might even see some lineups that look something like Mudiay, Will Barton, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Trey Lyles, and Mason Plumlee. To me, that's a pretty good lineup offensively. That's enough spacing for Moutier that allows Mason Plumlee to kind of handle the ball more than he has now. I think one of the things that is probably frustrating Mason Plumlee right now is, like Jokic, he likes to play the DHO game and the pick and roll game, and he likes to catch the ball in that short roll and make decisions with it, find the open guy. Well, now you're going to provide him Juancho in one quarter, Trey Lyles in another quarter, Will Barton on the wing, pick and roll with Emmanuel Moutier, who's very good at attacking an open paint, and Plumlee, who's good at rolling to the rim. So I think you're going to be able to stretch the court and get some looks out of it, and Trey Lyles is going to be a big part of that. Now, he's going to have to knock down some shots. The Nuggets will probably have like a 9.5-man rotation, meaning either Lyles or Juancho will probably get limited minutes on most nights, and Wilson Chandler can slide in and play that four spot for one of them. But either way, I think you have enough spacing on there to run a very effective pick and roll off of the bench. Malik Beasley moves up in the rotation. I don't think he moves into the rotation, but he kind of moves into that next guy up in the guard slot. Will Barton might even slide to play some small forward now, or more small forward than usual, as you kind of slide everybody down a spot to go to play stretch lineups. And if they do that, Malik Beasley might be up. And then, of course, you know, you've got foul trouble. You've got minor injuries like a tweaked ankle or a guy gets sick or this or that. Now Malik Beasley, instead of being like two spots back on the depth chart, he's kind of moves up now to like next guy. So I think Malik Beasley now, his minutes go up from what they probably were expected to go up a day ago. So both of those guys kind of move into the rotation. I've kind of alluded to this one, but Emmanuel Moutier, now, everybody knows my thoughts on him as a player, but I will say this. I think that the number one way to get Emmanuel Moutier to play his best, from a coaching standpoint or a lineup standpoint, is to provide him with spacing. And as I just mentioned when I was talking about the last section, I think that Moutier is now, unless they play Darrell Arthur, I think Moutier is now going to have a lot of spacing on the floor. It's not just the second unit, by the way. So the second unit I just talked about is going to play minutes with Will Barton, maybe Wilson Chandler and Juancho, Wilson Chandler and Trey and Juancho, some combo there, and then Mason Plumlee is very good, especially in this type of offense. I think he'll look better than he's appeared. I thought he's been good. I just didn't think he has fit so much this year. I think he's going to fit a lot more in these stretchy lineups. So I think Moutier actually, this is a great opportunity for him to sort of get in a groove, and a consistent groove. He's had a couple really, really good games this year, but they're sandwiched in between, in my opinion, a lot of really bad games. So I think this is an opportunity for him to be put in the best position for him to shine. So I'm kind of excited to see. I'm kind of excited to see how this bench unit starts to perform now that they're playing what I think is probably a more optimal lineup for Moutier in particular. So it's kind of a great opportunity for him. Mason Plumlee, it's sort of the same thing. These two things go hand in hand. Oh, the other thing about Moutier, you know, you look at him right now, it's not just about, okay, what does the bench unit look like? It's also what does the starters are going to stagger in there too. So when you talk about small ball, I think you're also going to get some small ball lineups that look something like Moutier, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Nikola Jokic. That's a lineup that I think Moutier can really, really excel in, because now you don't just have good spacing, you've got great spacing. Gary Harris, elite three-point shooter. Will Barton, elite three-point shooter. Juancho Hernan Gomez, elite three-point shooter. Jokic, elite playmaker in the pick and roll in the DHO. You gave everything you need for Emmanuel Moutier to kind of excel as a point of attack off of the pick and roll. So I think there's going to be those lineups too that stagger behind the starting lineup that can be really, really beneficial for Moutier and really kind of accentuate the good parts of his game. So for Mason Plumlee, similar, you know, let's just look at it this way. I think Nikola Jokic is going to play 34 minutes per game. Malone says he likes to get in between 32 and 34. I think it's probably going to be closer to 34 now that the Nuggets are just going to need it. They don't have Paul Millsap on the court to kind of carry those minutes when he's not in. So now you got Jokic probably playing somewhere around 34 minutes per game. That leaves 14 minutes of center. Right now, you look at Mason Plumlee, he's only playing 14, 15 minutes a game total, and half of that's coming as a power forward. Now you look at it, he is going to play probably 14 minutes of center per game. Nuggets have to go to him. My guess is that they're going to play somewhere between 4 and 10 minutes of him at power forward. I hope that Malone's rotation, especially against the Rockets, but I hope that Malone's rotation does not include Plumlee coming in at the six-minute mark and them going with the Twin Towers lineup right off of the bat. I would much rather them see them go to some smaller lineups, but I would say Malone probably is going to go to the Plumlee-Jokic lineup early and often, you know, halfway through that first quarter and probably halfway through that third quarter. But either way, you're looking at him not from now where it's kind of like situational. He plays 5 minutes some nights, 15 the other, but really never that many. I think he's going to be a consistent 14-minute minimum guy who probably hovers around 20 to 25 minutes every single night now. I think his minutes go way up. I think his role goes way up. And similar to Emmanuel Mudiay, I think it actually fits him better. If they're starting to go small, I just think it accentuates his skill set. Off of the bench, he's going to be asked to be not necessarily a playmaker, you know, quote-unquote playmaker, but he's going to handle the ball a lot more, especially in pick and rolls at the top of the key. So I think Plumlee actually is going to have a great opportunity here to sort of carve out a niche on this team and maybe shine a little bit. So he's a guy that steps in and I think fills this role really nicely. Lastly, before we move on, obviously, and this kind of segues nicely into the team dynamic, Nikola Jokic's role changes, I think, very significantly. He is now the undisputed best player of the team. I think, you know, a lot of us fans, especially the type of fans that listen to the show, already saw him as the best player of the team, the kind of transcendent talent, the guy. But, you know, you had Paul Millsap that was there, and, you know, there was an argument to be made as Paul Millsap's team, or he was the leader, or all these different things. And I think now everything revolves around Jokic. Every single thing, much like it did last year. I think only even more so. Last year you still had Gallinari, you know, even Jameer a little bit. I think now this is a Nikola Jokic team. It's a Nikola Jokic identity. Everything is going to be, he is going to become the center of the universe for the Denver Nuggets, much more so than he would have had he continued to play for Paul Millsap. And obviously, I think I would rather Jokic and Millsap than no Millsap at all. It's not even close to me. I actually really, really, really like the Millsap-Jokic pairing, and I was just so high on where it was going, so optimistic on the direction it was going. But I think now you look at it and you say this is Jokic's team and he's so clearly the guy. And I don't think anyone can question that. I don't think anybody in the organization questioned that. I think everybody kind of knew. But, you know, now you look around the roster, I think all of the players kind of look and see, like, man, this guy now, they need him to kind of be the superstar player that everybody believes him to be in a more pressure-filled and eyes-on-him type of role. And there's also the leadership void that I think he has been reluctant to fill to this point. And here's what I find interesting. I think the team had an idea this news was coming ahead of Sacramento game last night. I think, you know, Millsap flying home, I'm guessing he was probably in some pain. I'm guessing that the writing was on the wall, even if it wasn't spoken or told, the team was told or any of this stuff. I'm guessing that they kind of knew and the players kind of knew. And we look at the reports out of the broadcast crew talking about, man, Jokic is really focused this game. He's really vocal. He's stepping into it. This is something that we've never seen from Jokic. We've never seen from him. And this is just a theory. This is just something I'm kind of throwing out there to kind of chew on. I'm not saying it happened. I wasn't in Sacramento. I can't vouch for this. But, you know, Millsap, you hear Barton talk about, and some of the guys talk about the leadership that Millsap has brought. And a little bit of it's a vocal leadership, but it's a lot of a by example leadership. And then also, you know, Barton even talked about Millsap being this like encouraging force during timeouts, like, hey, we're going to win this game. We just got to stay focused and buy in. Well, what happens now? Millsap has that void or has that role. He leaves and there's a void and everybody knows who the next man up is. It's Nikola Jokic. Never thought of him as a leader. I just don't think he's that type, at least at this. He's still very much a young at heart, but I thought he looked like a guy that was focused in this last game and also trying to become a leader in this game. And who knows? It's not going to happen overnight. One game against Sacramento where he steps up and is the vocal leader, it's not going to change. But I wonder if he sort of observed Paul Millsap over this last 3 months they've spent together, and I wonder if he's kind of taken mental notes of just how he leads by example. And, you know, we've seen Nikola Jokic's defensive effort just go through the roof and his offensive. I think Nikola Jokic is playing as hard or harder than I've ever seen him play. And you know, I wonder if he kind of saw the writing on the wall heading into that Sacramento game of, look, this season is about to slip out of our hands and we have this major void, and maybe he's prepared and ready to take the reins. I don't think he was. At Media Day, I didn't think he was, and I asked him specifically about it. I said, how does it feel to come in and now everybody, you know, feels that it's your team? And he like, not trying to be modest or whatever, like, he did not want that label. He's like, no, we have a four-time All-Star. This is his team. I'm just here to help out. I think maybe now there's no excuse, but it's just so clear what he has to do, and he has to take over a lot more roles on offense, a lot more roles on defense, and a lot more roles just in timeouts and on the bench as a sort of leadership role. And I'm curious to see how he approaches that and how he handles it. It's too much pressure to put on a third-year player. It's unfair, but the NBA is unfair. This is how it works. And it's just going to be so interesting to see. Now, you look at Jokic this year, number one in defensive RPM, real plus minus. I laugh because RPM is my favorite stat by far of these catch-all stats. But it's funny to see him at number one defensively. I think, you know, now he's going to have to, his role, he's going to have to figure out a way to maintain this defensive focus and intensity while also taking on this enormous workload on the offensive end. He's basically going to have to play like last year, but better. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's going to have to go back to being the guy that facilitates every single night. The way he did this last game against Sacramento, he's going to have to pick his spots on when to be aggressive scoring. He's just not going to be able to take nights off and take quarters off or anything like that. The team is going to be looking to him, and I'm just curious to see how he handles it. It's, again, a lot of pressure. It's unfair pressure, but life's unfair, and this is the situation the Nuggets have found themselves in. And lastly, as a team, what does this mean for the Denver Nuggets? Obviously, this is a huge, huge blow. I think this makes them significantly worse, obviously, in the long run. But you look at it and say, can they tread water? Can they kind of maintain? They've got this three-game lead on above 500 at the moment. What is it going to do to them? You look at the schedule. They've got two pretty hard games, one really hard game and one kind of hard game. Against the Houston Rockets, I mean, you almost schedule that as a loss. We'll see if they get an emotional bump and come out and just fly around as this, like, we're going to prove we're not just going to lay down. But Houston's maybe the best team or second best team in the NBA right now. You easily make that argument. That's a tough one going on the road. Then they have Memphis at home, who's always a tough out. That'll be an interesting one. I like their chances if they had Millsap, because I think then the Nuggets have a great chance against them, especially without Conley. But, you know, that's two tough games. But then they get a nice break. Three full days of practice, which I think are going to be much needed here in Denver, before they take two home games against very bad opponents, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Chicago Bulls. So they get 3 days off leading into those games, and they get a day off in between. That's a great opportunity to sort of regroup. And I'm not saying they're going to go 0-2 in these next two. I'm just saying that whatever happens between now and Saturday, they will have a chance on Saturday to regroup and kind of restructure and figure out who they are going to try to be in the absence of Paul Millsap. And right after those two home games against bad opponents, they go on a big six-game road trip. And again, it's a tough road trip. Those aren't easy games. And it's a long road trip that sees them on the road, I think, for 11 days. But another nice thing about it is these long road trips, especially in a moment like this, can be a great opportunity for guys to kind of come together and figure it out. So it's a really interesting opportunity. And I think between now and, you know, the second week of December or so, we're going to have a really good idea of what direction this team's going to go. They cannot afford, unfortunately, this is the NBA. This is the Western Conference. They can't afford a huge dip. They have to get going right away in order to make the playoffs. And I think the playoffs are still attainable. The odds have obviously slipped significantly. I thought the Nuggets were 80-85% chance of making the playoffs as they were as constructed. I just thought they were moving in the right direction. And I just thought they were going to get there before too long. But now, you know, your odds drop, and in my opinion, maybe slightly below 50% even, because, you know, teams like Portland and Memphis and Oklahoma City are one of those three teams has to miss out in order for Denver to get in, as well as New Orleans and all these other teams, Utah, the Clippers. So it's going to be tough, and I think you look at the odds and say they're maybe against Denver. You would take the field rather than take Denver in this one, but you know what, there's an opportunity here for guys to really step up and catapult themselves to a whole other level, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. I think the Nuggets become a much better offensive team and a much worse defensive team. I shouldn't say a much better offensive team. I think they can become a better offensive team than they are at this moment. Not a better offensive team than I think they were going to be in 2 months with Paul Millsap, but a better offensive team at this moment. But I think they become a significantly worse defensive team, a much, much worse defensive team. And that's just going to be tough. But they can maybe play 500 ball and get to that all-star break, still three games above 500. Millsap returns, and who knows what can happen. I think the hardest thing for the Nuggets with this whole thing is going to be reintegrating. So assuming that they're able to play and maintain this, like, you know, top 6, 7, 8 seed in the Western Conference by the time Millsap returns, if that's February or March, whenever, or I mean, if he doesn't return at all, then obviously throw this out. But if he returns in February, March, you know, I think the biggest challenge here is that, you know, it was a process getting familiar with Millsap and working those, and Millsap getting familiar with the team getting familiar with Millsap. Basically cutting out the entire season and then trying to, on the fly, figure out where he fits in, I think is going to be the team's biggest challenge in theory going forward. So even if he returns and is fully healthy in March, the Nuggets schedule from the beginning of March till the end of the season is just absolutely brutal. It's not going to be forgiving. And trying to integrate a new piece like that at that point could be a challenge. It's going to be a huge challenge for the team. Lastly, I think the way that the organization approaches this obstacle is going to go a long way in determining what kind of era this one is, this Nikola Jokic, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray era, because you look at it, especially with Gary Harris, who kind of marks the beginning of this era, his fourth year now with the Nuggets, it's been a slow and steady climb, and there was all this excitement. I mean, you could just, for us covering the team, you could feel it and you could sense it, but it hadn't paid off yet. It was like an excitement for something they were earning, in the process of earning, but had not earned. And if the team takes this and does not, and it lets them completely derail their season, I think that really bodes poorly for, you know, just kind of the outlook of this team going forward. But if they approach this challenge the way the Boston Celtics have, who in their first game lost Gordon Hayward, their best player, and has kind of not embraced that adversity, but they've grown so much for it. You look at, I don't think anybody can say Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum would be where they are right now if Gordon Hayward were still playing, because he would have provided that safety blanket. I think the same thing is true of Paul Millsap, who's clearly one of the two best players on this Nuggets roster and makes the team better. But now they don't have that luxury of being able to rely on him, so maybe some of the guys step up. As I mentioned, Nikola Jokic specifically, but maybe even Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, Emmanuel Mudiay, Juancho Hernangómez. I'm curious to see if one of those guys step up, and I'm just curious to see how the organization approaches this one. From ownership to management to the coaching staff to the players, I'm just curious to see how they respond to this enormous and unfair bit of adversity. I think it's going to go a long way to kind of determining what kind of character this team has for years to come. It sucks, Nuggets Nation. This happens. It's Nug life. It's the peak. You know, this is like the culmination of Nug life over the last 5-6 years or so. But it's the breaks. It's the way it goes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We're going to have a lot more. Even tomorrow, we'll have a summit, a special Thanksgiving summit episode coming to you. We'll see you.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.